Hello, my name is Marjorie Wingrove, and I'm the host of this show, Death Happens. My gratitude goes to Trent Radio for making this possible. I've created this show in order to bring death education to the community and to normalize how we talk about death, often an uncomfortable or taboo topic. It's normal to fear the unknown, but I believe that knowledge and preparation can give us peace of mind and lessen our fear. Thank you to my guest today, Olga Nikolaev, and to all of you listening in. I'd like to share a song with you now by Amy Bishop, an artist from Calgary. This is called Remembered.
Hello, my friends. Your love is always true. My life is so much richer for having been with you. One day when you hear my voice dancing on a breeze, know I love you just the same, and I carry you with me. Let me be remembered for a difference I have made. When I reach my last surrender, right, she was loved upon my grave. When my time is over, my love will carry on. Let me be remembered when I'm gone. Hello, my love, you're all that I desire, and in this life together, we never lost that fire. You are my best friend, we grew up and we grew old. Moved and changed my spirit. You are tattooed on my soul. For all my years, there's one thing that I know. The love you gave me, I take it with me when I go. Did my best to teach you well. Loving you is heaven. Leaving you is hell. Your voices and your laughter ring echoes in my heart. Know that I will always love you so, and we will never be apart. Let me be remembered for a difference I have made. When I reach my last surrender, right, caring mother on my grave. When my time is over, my love will carry on. Let me be remembered when I'm gone.
My guest today is Olga Nikolaev. Olga has over 20 years of experience in healthcare, having served as a regional hospice palliative care planner, a community palliative care nurse, and a healthcare planner. She founded the Death Doula Ontario Network in June of 2020. Olga is also one of the facilitators in the Thanatology program, which is housed in Centennial College. Welcome, Olga. There's so much more I can
Thank
share
you,
about what you do. It's really good to have you here. Your skills are so diverse. Have I left anything out that you'd like to share?
Oh, there's always things to add as the world keeps turning and different opportunities arise. So I'm thrilled to say that I'm now part of a team I am potentially being voted in as the international representative for the Accreditation Council with the Association of Death Educators and Counselors, which is housed in the States and is really the association that's now sort of spearheading a lot of the death educators and death counselors and some of that work, including accrediting. So, you know, that the CT behind my name is the certification of thanatology from ADAC. So it's going to be an exciting couple of years being part of an international organization looking at death education and how to move that forward.
Absolutely. And that's something that doulas that I know, we've talked a lot about this, about how do you let people know that you've got credentials, that you've got qualifications to do this work? Because right now there isn't necessarily anything to regulate or to certify officially what a death doula does right now.
Correct. I think, and you know, specifically in Canada, I think that there are a number of different programs, right? So when we look at certification or sort of the professionalization, especially the end of life doula role per se, right? Is there skills that you're taught, but is there sort of a feedback loop? And what I mean by that is there a form of testing to ensure that you actually have really grounded knowledge? And I think that's partly some of the thing that might be missing in some of the ways in which some of the courses are put out there. And so again, I think some of the colleges and even Douglas College is looking at how can they enhance the programming so it does certify a group of people to really say they have the knowledge because it has been tested and verified, right? And the other is potentially belonging to a particular association or a community of practice. Right. So the Association of Death Educators and Counselors is an international association and they have a rigorous testing. I mean, when you do the exam, it takes about 4 hours to do. And there's gazillion questions. They have developed what they call a matrix of knowledge, which has sort of these six domains and 10 issues that really cut across the intersection of all the legalities pertaining to death and dying, the religious practices, the social influences, as well as focusing on grief and even death or dying and grief through the lifespan. So how do we as children conceive and think about death and dying? How do we approach it? How are we encultured in different societies as children, you know, to behave a certain way with somebody who is grieving? Or how are we included or not included? And then how do we learn that, right? What might be some of the maybe some troubling times? You know, you can think about teenagers sometimes have a difficulty maybe integrating loss, and because they're oftentimes, you know, through those turbulent teens, there's lots of stuff going on and lots of hormones, right? We're also now better understanding that grief is very much a physiological response. And I can tell you, for somebody who fairly recently has lost somebody quite close to me, it has its own movement, and it's not something that you can really kind of set aside. You know, even today, I couldn't even see my floors properly as I was crying and vacuuming. I was just allowing the grief to just move through me so that it would be integrated instead of holding it back or denying it or leaving it for later when maybe it wouldn't have been the best of times. Vacuuming was a good time.
And grief is different with every situation as well. even when it's someone close to us, our grief is expressed differently each time we go through it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I sometimes I think, though, in society, we have these notions of what it's supposed to look like or how we're supposed to behave. What is our public mourning supposed to be like? And unfortunately, I think because in the West, we haven't really had a lot of learning or discussions around end of life care, we kind of just go the way of avoiding it, right? The way of just putting it aside and putting on a happy face and, you know, putting a mask on. And I think a lot of people are grieving in a very solitary way, in a very isolated way. And so, and especially now, right? So in the midst of a pandemic and the number of losses, this is the other assumption that we oftentimes make in when we're talking about end of life care or death and dying, is that we assume that the loss or the grief that we feel is only for another person, but it doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily so. Our losses can be the loss of interaction, the loss of our work, the loss of our meaning, the loss of all of these different things that we're actually experiencing, not only on, you know, a local level or even a national level, but a global level. Like, that to me is the level, and for someone who, you know, is a bit sensitive, or I know folks who are, you know, oftentimes called empaths, mm-hmm. that kind of global grief is felt in the body, and is oftentimes sort of the energy of it too, right? Because you can feel it. You know, when you enter a room and you know, and somebody is grieving, you can feel it. There's a essence that you feel in the room before they even say something. So I can't imagine. Well, I can imagine. And I'm feeling some of that global kind of mourning that we're going through.
So we've kind of jumped in the deep end with this conversation. There are people who are listening probably saying, what the heck are they talking about? What is this show? What are they talking about? We've been talking about what it means to be a doula, but there are people listening who don't know yet what a doula is. So maybe we can just, you know, back it up a little bit and talk about what is a death doula or end of life doula.
Certainly. So I think fundamentally a doula, if we look at that word and stemming sort of from the Greek word, it means somebody who serves, right? Somebody who is supportive. And most often the doula is associated with the birth doula. So it's another woman who potentially helps another woman. Again, the two bookends, birth and death, are not necessarily, you know, they're both physical expressions, right? Just like we say death isn't necessarily an illness. They're the bookends of life, and they kind of require a social, you know, a communal kind of holding of space for these two particular activities. Even though we know that we die alone and will birth alone, right? No one else, no other woman's, well, unless they're a surrogate, of course. But certainly those are, while they're individual, they're still within that social kind of landscape, right? Because birth impacts the whole family, not just the one person. It impacts the whole family. And the same is true of death. When someone dies, in the statistics, you can, they say it affects at least five people, and that's at least five people, right? But it ripples out to really have an impact on a number of other folks. So a doula is really a support person who provides that support at birth or death. And in this case, end of life doulas are really trained to provide some of that death education. So really, called death literacy, right? So having the experience, the interpersonal skills, the knowledge, and the know-how to act on and make decisions around end-of-life care. Mm-hmm. So again, and so an end-of-life doula, in many cases, like a birth doula, will provide some of the particular options and choices in relationship to end-of-life care to the particular person and their family, right? It's very unique to that particular family, right? Because all of us are going to be quite unique in that way. So whether it's the, you know, who we are and what our preferences are, or our values, the meaning that we see in life and the meaning of our death, and then what is our resource circle, who's our family. And then sometimes, you know, the end of life doula serves then as the education, but also supporting the family along the way. So they might start off having these conversations with the person themselves who might have been diagnosed with a terminal illness and doesn't really, or, you know where to go, or is having a difficult time trying to grasp what that really means. Because end-of-life doulas are oftentimes comfortable talking about death, right? They can hold the space for someone as they're searching for, what does this mean for them? How is their life going to change now that they have this particular life-limiting illness? Yeah. And then they can provide some information, work alongside with the healthcare team. So again, another misconception is that death doulas, end-of-life doulas replace, you know, a palliative care team. And that is not so, because we have a number of gaps and a lot of spaces where the care for someone at the end of life can be enhanced. Right. The other thing that's really unique about end-of-life doulas is that they also are able to have conversation about post-death care. They're not funeral directors, but can also, you know, do a little bit of a resource finding, information seeking, really also even inform clients that, you know, they have rights. They have rights in relationship to the costing of funerals, or even some of the clarification around, you know, what are the legislated roles of the funeral industry and the funeral directors and staff, and what are the added on components, you know, celebrations, those kinds of things, and how those two interact, and you know, explaining some of that so people have more clarity. And I think when we have more clarity, then we have a bit more choice. I think we then can decide, you know, based on what is meaningful for us, what is going to work for our family, what is actually even accessible and doable. Sometimes we talk about green burials or some of the unique new body dispositions that are out there, but they're not available to all of us, right? So again, at an end-of-life doula, we'll have to take into consideration all of those different elements. For a family that a doula might be helping out in a rural community, maybe the access to a green burial is really not an option because it might be too far away, and maybe they don't have necessarily the finances to enable that to happen. So they're really, you know, looking at all those different resources and working with the family to devise a plan that's going to work for them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I encourage, when I facilitate the end of life doula program, is to have a plan A and a plan B and a plan C, because we really don't know what may happen. And oftentimes, even though someone may be on a specific illness trajectory, let's say cancer, they sometimes may die of something else, like pneumonia or an infection, or now maybe of COVID.
Right. And what you're talking about, so many people in the general population don't talk about death. You know, we talk about it all the time, but they don't talk about it. They don't think about what the options are. They think, you know, that there's just, this is what you do, and that it'll all take care of itself. Yep. And it doesn't all.
And I'm not surprised.
No.
Really, Marjorie? No, I'm not surprised, because that's the way that it was. That's the way that it was. You know, 75 years ago, somebody would die in the family. The family would take care of all those things, mm-hmm. right? The family and sometimes the communities were much smaller, right? So the funeral home or those kinds of things had different relations. I think partly because of our increase in size, mm-hmm. right? This is one of the things we talk about in the program, looking at the influences over time that have really shifted and shaped and kind of, you know, kind of manipulated or massaged, and can't quite figure out what the word, influenced approach that we have to death and dying, right? Just think about our approach now. Because of the pandemic, our whole approach as end-of-life doula, which so much concentrated on enhancing the vigilant component, which was to really be present for that sacred time when somebody is going through their dying, their active dying phase, and now very limited by the way in which we can actually create that healing circle for them, create that sacred space. We're very limited. So how are we going to do this a little bit differently, right? We're already adapting again.
Many of us are working online. We're, you know,
right,
online with our clients who are actively dying.
That's right. That's,
you know, what we're missing is that we were talking about it the other night, the reaction you have from the interaction we have with people, and that tactile, just a way of, like you were saying too, the feeling when you walk in a room that from other people.
The energy.
The energy. We're missing out on so much of that. So there are a lot of members in the Death Doula Ontario network, which is fairly new. And what I'm learning is the scope of skill sets that people have, just the different backgrounds we all come from. And, you know, a death doula doesn't necessarily do this particular thing. There's such a range of talent.
It's quite amazing. One of the things that over the last 2 years that I've had the privilege and the honor, because it really is a privilege and an honor, even to have access to this type of training, right? Just think about the fact that death education is not really accessible very much. Right? It's still in the hands of those of healthcare providers and now educators. Because if you try and get, you know, you either have to do your own particular studies. And I think a lot of these, you know, the thanatology or the death studies, they came out of people who did a lot of their own particular studies and then thought, oh, this would be really great to share with other people. I mean, this is how the End of Life Doula program that Douglas College put forth really started, with one person, maybe two, kind of coming together saying, how can we put something together that will really help caregivers and those who want to be supportive in including the role of an end-of-life doula? How can they do this? And what are the core elements that they really need, right? So communication skills, also understanding sort of the natural process of grief or some of the particular theories, as well as the legalities, right? All of the ways in which they have to navigate not only the healthcare system, but also then the post-death care system. So the death industry, right? This is all of it. And so it really started off with that learning. And what I realized is that even, and I knew this for myself as a young nurse, not having actually have a lot of skills around how to be supportive at the end of life. That was to me really surprising, that I was not really well prepared, right? Because it requires such a holistic perspective, that many of the participants that come in, most of them come in with this vision that they want to help others and want to be this death doula. And what I think most of them find is that the resources were really valuable for their own understanding of not only what they went through and how they can heal, maybe sometimes the trauma that they have gone through, because many come in thinking, I don't want that to happen to anyone else. And I want to know how to do this better. And I want to know how I can advocate for others, because that wasn't great. And so they want to really facilitate that. So there's a lot of healing that comes through that. And then, you know, so they come in from, they might even be hospice palliative care nurses. They might be community nurses, because they're still missing potentially a piece. And that's oftentimes in relationship to some of the cultural perspectives, or maybe even some of the funeral rites, or even some of the legalities pertaining to, you know, what you can do and what the options are in relationship to post-death care. And then we have funeral directors who come in, which is really great, because they know the post-death stuff, but they want to have some more knowledge around how to really have these communications ahead of time, how to engage their community. So they're not necessarily the ones who are sitting with them for 3 hours and painfully going through the very practical things that they need. It's really hard in the acute phases of grief for you to even think about your mother's maiden name, which is a requirement for a death certificate. So again, right, there's so much that we don't realize that in the immediacy after that death, there's so much that needs to happen that we're not even able to physically, mentally focus on those particular needs, and how helpful it would be to do some of that ahead of time, or at least have it written down somewhere so that we could give it to the funeral director, and then we can just, and not just, but we can take the time to sit with our person, to sit with that grief, to sit with and be with it. Because I think, you know, having gone through, and I have not lost my parents. My parents are still alive, although my father will be 80 next year. Or no, not next year, this year. We're already in 2021. So he'll be 80. He'll be 80 in February. But I have had these conversations with them, you know, to the point where initially 5 or 7 years ago, however long it was, kind of nudging them to say, what would you want? You know, have you been thinking about, to the point where my father, you know, has almost his clothes picked out, right? He's like ready. He's got the kind of like the labor bag, right? For the birthing of himself into the next incarnation or something, right? But let's think about death in that way. You know, have you got your death file? Have you got your death bag, right? Because certainly the doulas do. But do you have the things that will give you comfort? I just think about when my friend died, you know, he had some things, but there would have been other things that would have given him a lot of comfort if he had them, right? So having that, those items to go with them.
I think about how things have evolved over the last 16 years. I think that was the beginning of my education in death, because I went to the funeral home with my mother as she was making funeral arrangements. She was paying for things, and it was a real eye opener. I thought, well, thank goodness she's doing this. This is really smart. And from that day, I started making payments for my final plans. And well, I loved that the funeral director didn't know that my mother was ill. And he said, well, hopefully you won't have to use this too soon. And my mother kind of winked at me.
And those small little things, right, sometimes let me know we still have a lot of learning to do, even those that are in it, even though, right? I mean, this is, I think my lifelong journey is always to continue to learn, and to not only, because, you know, going back to facilitating the end of life doula program, or even the thanatology program, one of the privileges that I hold is actually being able to hear the personal stories of all of those people, right? Because part of the learning is you have to kind of get a little bit vulnerable to dive into your own story and to talk about that, because that fundamentally will always influence your approach. Where you learn things from, your particular experience will always influence your approach with others. And so it's such a privilege to not only grade, and I actually don't grade the personal stories. Everybody gets a pass because they're they're sharing, right? And again, how healing it is, especially in the when we're able to share together, when there's, you know, 10, 20 of us, and each person shares their personal story, and how much learning there is from those unique perspectives, but also some of those really practical things. You know, how it is done in Peterborough is different than how it is done in Trillium. And again, lots of awareness happens when people realize that it's not the same across the board. Mm-hmm. That really, you know, even the accessibility of having access to palliative care really varies and depends on where you live. And it's not, right? So we're still fundamentally, I think, I'm also not only enlightening folks, I think, on end-of-life care, but also the state of our, the disparity of our healthcare system, and the disparity and the, you know, unequal distribution of our social services and supports in our communities.
I'm looking at the time, Olga. I hope that you'll be a guest again.
Absolutely.
Anytime.